Chapter 14. Susan's flat was small but spacious, which was a trick, reflected Richard tensely as he turned on the light, that only women seem able to pull off. It wasn't that observation which made him tense, of course. He'd thought it before, many times. Every time he'd been in her flat, in fact. It always struck him, usually because he had just come from his own flat, which was four times the size and cramped. He had just come from his own flat this time, only via a rather eccentric route, and it was this that made his usual observation unusually tense. Despite the chill of the night, he was sweating. He looked back out of the window, turned and tiptoed across the room, where the telephone and the answering machine stood on their own small table. There was no point, he told himself, in tiptoeing. Susan wasn't in. He would be extremely interested in knowing where she was, in fact, just as she, he told himself, had probably been extremely interested in knowing where he had been at the beginning of the evening. He realized he was still tiptoeing. He hit his leg to make himself stop doing it, but carried on doing it nonetheless. Climbing up the outside wall had been terrifying. He wiped his forehead with the arm of his oldest and greasiest sweater. There had been a nasty moment when his life had flashed before his eyes, but he'd been too preoccupied with falling and had missed all the good bits. Most of the good bits had involved Susan, he realized. Susan or computers. Never Susan and computers. Those had largely been the bad bits. Which was why he was here, he told himself. He seemed to need convincing, and told himself again. He looked at his watch. 11:45. It occurred to him he'd better go and wash his wet and dirty hands before he touched anything. It wasn't the police he was worried about, but Susan's terrifying cleaner. She would know. He went into the bathroom, turned on the light switch, wiped it, and then stared at his own startled face in the bright neon-lit mirror as he ran the water over his hands. For a moment he thought of the dancing warm candlelight of the Coleridge dinner, and the images of it welled up out of the dim and distant past of the earlier part of the evening. Life had seemed easy then, and carefree. The wine, the conversation, simple conjuring tricks. He pictured the round, pale face of Sarah, pop-eyed with wonder. He washed his own face. He thought, beware, beware, his flashing eyes, his floating hair. He brushed his own hair. He thought, too, of the pictures hanging high in the darkness over their heads. He cleaned his teeth. The low buzz of the neon light snapped him back to the present, and he suddenly remembered with appalled shock that he was here in his capacity as burglar. Something made him look himself directly in the face in the mirror. Then he shook his head, trying to clear it. When would Susan be back? That, of course, would depend on what she was doing. He quickly wiped his hands and made his way back to the answering machine. He prodded at the buttons, and his conscience prodded back at him. The tape wound back for what seemed to be an interminable time, and he realized with a jolt that it was probably because Gordon had been in full flood. He had forgotten, of course, that there would be messages on the tape other than his own, and listening to other people's phone messages was tantamount to opening their mail. He explained to himself once again that all he was trying to do was to undo a mistake he had made before it caused any irrevocable damage. He would just play tinier snippets until he found his own voice. That wouldn't be too bad. He wouldn't even be able to distinguish what was being said.